Lieutenant Colonel Tim Maxwell is a 42-year-old Marine who has completed 6 combat tours in his life, but cannot start a 7th. Maxwell sustained a traumatic brain injury, a TBI, in Iraq in 2004. The recovery was painful and tough. Based on his experience and his observations about some of the unique needs of injured soldiers, Maxwell successfully lobbied the Marine Corps to start the first Wounded Warriors Barracks, group housing where like-wounded servicemen can recuperate together. It's called Maxwell Hall and is at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina. When we spoke to the Lieutenant Colonel, it was hard to imagine that part of this man's brain was destroyed by a mortar. But you will hear during the interview how his injury created permanent verbal roadblocks along the way.
About a quarter the size of a 10 cent dime.
Mm-hmm.
Quarter dime.
From time to time, he will ask for some assistance.
I'm sorry, I have trouble with words and my partner's helping me.
The Lieutenant Colonel spoke with us at length about his program, his own struggle, and his goal of making sure no soldier feels alone. How did the idea of the Wounded Warriors Barracks come about?
It just kind of was a real simple idea that just sort of grew. And it was because first thing I was able to do when I was able to walk, and, you know, I'm not very good at sitting around and doing nothing. I just wanted to go see some of the other wounded guys. In Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, they got a Navy hospital there, and that's where I started. I couldn't even drive yet. My wife would take me, drop me off, and then pick me up like 2 hours later, and I did only a couple wounded guys there, but I talked to the nurses and doctors, and that's kind of how it started. And then over time, I started finding more wounded guys who were still living by themselves on base at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. It's called a BEQ, Bachelor Enlisted Quarters, and that's where the guys are kind of living by themselves because the unit would usually still be in Iraq or Afghanistan. So I thought, golly, we should put these guys all living in the same place. And that's just kind of how it started. Just by talking to guys who were kind of sitting around doing nothing all day, every day. Boredom.
What need does the Wounded Warrior Barracks meet that really wasn't being met before? I hear you, the loneliness, obviously, because these guys were all living by themselves.
Well, it's a hard one. Mostly, the most important thing for them was just to be together. It wasn't just boredom. It's a lot of depression. Depression is a tough word to use. Guilt. A lot of guys get wounded, they feel guilty, like they did something stupid when they got hit. And also when their unit is still in Iraq, they're very, very nervous about their friends. It's their best friends in the world. Remember, most of the wounded Marines and corpsmen and Navy guys that are attached to us, they're very young. Most of them just got out of high school, joined the Corps. And then within a year, 2 years, you know, they've gone over, seen combat once, twice, some of them 3 times. And when their unit's in Iraq or Afghanistan, they're real worried every day. So probably the first thing we saw the benefit of this was that they could get more information. That was probably the first thing we saw besides just being together. More information was available because they're a bunch of wounded guys together. So they could tell each other. The kid doesn't like his doctor or his doctor's too busy or, you know, what he doesn't know, he can get a second opinion or just basic stuff. There's a lot of things. I could go for an hour telling you all the things we learned, but it would bore you.
It wouldn't bore me, but we've got a lot to get to. You're 42 years old. A lot of these kids who are ending up in these barracks are 18 and 19 years old. You mentor these kids. You talk to them about their problems. Obviously, the physical difficulties, we can all understand what they need there. But when these guys and gals come to you and they're looking for guidance and mentorship, what do you find yourself giving guidance about?
This is going to be a really strange answer to your question. What's our primary? We don't call it mentorship. I like to refer to it as leadership. It makes me feel better about myself.
Okay.
Because I try to still be able to do that. Interestingly, I think, is the American public, is we have to get them to fight for themselves. Now they're not in a unit that has a mission. They are the unit that has a mission, and their mission is to take care of themselves. So if they need help with this or that, or they need to do the physical training every day, and they've got to take the medication, but don't overtake medication, I tell them they got to think of themselves as a unit, and you're in command. I tell the young 19-year-old kid who's used to taking orders and doing what he's told to do. Now suddenly you're in charge of yourself. You have to make yourself follow the rules. You have to make yourself do the training. You have to make yourself come up with a mission. What are you going to do with your life? What's your plan? It's a very complicated shift in life from doing what they're told, from high school to boot camp, which is where you learn to keep your mouth shut and do what you're told. We got to kind of teach them to, you're not being a sissy. You're not crying. You're not being a baby when you ask for additional help. And that's hard transition for them. They're used to not complaining about anything. And we got to kind of teach them to complain a bit. I know that sounds weird, but they got to tell us when there's a problem. They will tell you nothing. You find a wounded Marine anywhere in the country, anybody of any rank, a civilian, doesn't matter. You ask them, does he need anything? And they'll tell you, nope, I'm fine. That's what they tell you. I'm talking about, I need a pair of pants that will fit over this, my leg. I can't put my jeans on. I need to get some pants, but I can't drive because I'm not allowed to drive. So I need somebody to take me to the store to get me some pants. Mm-hmm. Things like that. They got to ask somebody. That, again, is when they live together, it's much, much easier because they're hanging out with new friends. And so they will ask a buddy. That's why bringing them to the barracks was so good, because they could talk to a friend and ask them for help here. And there's all kinds of little problems, like food, what can they eat, when can they eat it. Couldn't sleep last night, very common. Marines can't sleep very well when they're, again, I say Marine, but I'm sure all service wounded guys are the same.
Maxwell is a man who speaks with authority on this topic. He was wounded so badly in 04, at one point the doctors told his family he'd have the capacity of a second grader. Maxwell told us he never saw the mortar coming.
Went to my room, left my boots on, my camouflage uniform on, laid down on the ground, and woke up the next day in the hospital. That's how I got hit. Mortar round hit me. Shrapnel come up the left side of my body, from my left knee up into my left jaw, and I think about eight little pieces of shrapnel just punched in right in my jaw, and two of them about a quarter the size of a 10 cent dime.
Mm-hmm.
Call it a dime? Punched through two of them and went into my brain and chopped up and punched a piece of my brain. So that's where I got my TBI. It's very unusual. I got a specific portion of my brain that is dead, but the rest of it is okay.
What did you have to relearn once you got back and got into the hospital and went into rehab?
Everything you did this morning when you woke up. Eat, stand, walk, shave, brush my teeth, talk, everything. I couldn't do anything initially.
When you see a young soldier in the same position that you were in, what do you do? What do you say to that family, that soldier?
Yeah, that's a good one, too. Shockingly, I keep coming across, and I'm right when I see these guys. You look in their eyes. What I do is I look in their eyes, and if their eyes are open, their eyes are awake, they don't even have to be knowledgeable. They don't have to know what they're seeing. But if they look and see, they come out of it. Happens every time. You just see it. You can just see it. Only when you've seen 40, 50, 60 guys, you start to know what you see.
I was going to say I can imagine, but I really can't.
It's really not hard. If someone like yourself went in Bethesda with me and I show you the eyes, I had you focus on the eyes, you do see it.
The thing that I find so, and I've read a lot about this and I've talked to soldiers over the course of the past years, which is hard to say, but when soldiers get back and when you talk to them and they've gone through the physical recovery, there's still a lot of emotional recovery they have to go through. And I know the word hero is one of those difficult words for soldiers who come back.
Yeah.
Do these young men, are they comfortable with the term hero, the men who have been wounded?
No, they're not. And what I try to get people when I meet those who want to speak highly of the wounded or particularly wounded guys, both Army and primarily for me, the Marines, I try to tell them to divert the statement of you are a hero to his unit. People don't understand, unless you've been in combat with your unit, you just can't understand what that unit is like. You're closer to them than anything you ever will be again in your life. And we've seen it in old movies and stories about World War II guys. Now Vietnam vets are finally less than, well, about 10 years now, they've been able to get together and be with their old platoon, and they're still as close as can be. So for this youngster to get complimented as a hero when he was in a platoon or a squad, it's embarrassing.
Hmm.
What I tell the youngster, well, oldsters too, but the youngsters have more trouble with, I say, when they tell you that you're a hero, I tell the Marine, they're talking about your platoon. They ain't talking about you. They're talking about your entire unit. So when they tell you that, you thank them, and you tell them about your unit. You tell them about your platoon, and let them share that. But yeah, I try to put the train both, or not, train's the wrong word, teach them both. Very tough to take to the concept. And remember, when probably 25%, maybe less, but a lot of the guys who got wounded, when they got wounded, their best friend next to them got killed. It's a little tough to be called a hero when your friend got killed sitting next to you when you just got wounded. And every one of them had somebody else next to them that didn't get wounded when they got wounded. And they feel like they screwed up.
Do they ever want to go back and go
every
back to fight?
Yeah, this is no joke. I'm not saying this because I'm wearing the uniform, and that's been a shock to me. Again, this is Marines. This is just Marines. These are the issues I do not talk with. You got to know them later. But I can tell you straight up, when they first get wounded, they all want to go back to the unit right away. Every one of them, all of us, want to know.
Were you the same way?
I knew that I couldn't make it back.
Right.
I knew that my injury was serious. I couldn't even walk yet. What I had hoped I could do is make my follow-on deployment. What initial phase I'm talking about is they want to go back to Iraq, Afghanistan. Now, they don't just want to get better and rejoin the Marine Corps. Initially, they want to go back to Iraq. Now, I'm not talking about the ones who have lost both legs. They know they ain't making it back. But guys who lost one leg, they want to know if they can rejoin the unit after they get their new leg. I mean, it happens all the time. Now, later, we got to okay them with the concept of going ahead and getting out of the Marine Corps. And we literally have, because that comes to them, of course. Later, they realize, golly, maybe I don't want to stay in the Corps. Maybe I want to do something else. And that's what's important to have our senior Marines talk to them about that. Say, hey, man, that's fine. That's good.
While the barracks help those who are currently wounded, the formerly wounded, who are now civilians, are next on the Lieutenant Colonel's outreach mission. This week, he begins overseeing a wounded warrior call center at the Marine base in Quantico, Virginia. Not only can Marines call in for information, the center will be calling out to find the nearly 9,000 Marines and Navy seamen injured since 9/11.
So the question is, what are the other 9,000 guys doing today? Not those still in the Marine Corps. We pretty much got those guys. You know, we know how they are and where they are, and we're tracking those guys pretty well. What about the guys that got hit in 9/11/02? You know, we got to find out where they are and what they're doing. So number one mission, the first stage, is to try to call everybody who's never been called and everybody who's not been tracked and find out how they're doing. And that's what we're talking about when you called here. We're looking at the list of questions. We're going to start asking them questions. Instead of saying, call me if you have a problem, which is common, we're going to call them and say, you ever heard of, you know what TSGLI is? Have you heard of that?
No, what is that?
What's TSGLI stand for?
That's Traumatic Servicemen's Group Life Insurance, one of the programs and services Maxwell wants to make sure servicemen know is available.
Because I believe that Marines and soldiers out there alone, they're suffering worse than those of us who are with other guys. And so they can't maybe move and be with other wounded guys, but they could see that they're still not alone out there. You know, there's a lot of them. And that's why I talked to you today, and I talked to every magazine article, every newspaper, everybody who talked to me, I talked to them, because I know there's somebody out there, some kid sitting by himself in some apartment, you know, playing Xbox or something, miserable. So that's what I'm hoping. I hope that word goes out.
Lieutenant Colonel Tim Maxwell, thank you for your time, sir.
Hey, hope it was worth talking to me.
And that was quite an affecting interview.
It was interesting to talk to him. I would have to remind myself that this man had this tremendous injury. I mean, it was amazing what he's accomplished, but there were many times during the interview he had to sort of stop and rethink or kind of lost words. And
that's the, you know, so that means that it was amazing, the content of what he was saying and also just that he was saying.
Yeah.
Did you see the James Gandolfini special on HBO?
That's a part of it, yep.
I mean, that was so good. You did a great job in that interview. It was interesting to see Gandolfini, not a professional interviewer, just kind of bond emotionally, and the kids, I mean, they were mostly younger than me.
It was interesting also, just after talking to Lieutenant Colonel Maxwell, after seeing that USA Today article on Friday, I don't know if a lot of people saw it because it was a holiday, they surveyed 4 military installations in the Department of Veteran Affairs where people were routinely screened for brain injuries, and they found that 20,000 people show signs of damage, and they're not counted in the Pentagon's official count. A lot of times the issues come up later.
Yeah, and a lot of times the Pentagon actually disputes if the injury was directly related to the job. Well, coming up on the BPP, we'll be taking a much lighter tack as we talk sports with your husband, first of all.
It's not light to him. The man is serious about his sports. We'll also talk about a fashion phenom, 26 years old, feature designer at Target. We'll hear her story coming up.